Sunday, June 3rd, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. So to begin today, I want to touch on something that was recently brought to my attention, which I was pretty surprised that I was not already aware of, and something that very clearly dispels this nonsensical notion that we need to somehow rebuild the U.S. military. And it's something we've talked about quite a bit on this show, and really just kind of discussing the propaganda that surrounds such a claim and how we're constantly trying to find and create these external threats to justify more military spending, despite the fact that we already spend more than the next nine countries combined and collectively account for about half or more of the world's entire military spending. And yet we continue to claim we need to rebuild our military. And it's a point that I found pretty shocking. But first, I want to touch on an article from Zero Hedge entitled, "Does the U.S. Military Have Too Many Aircraft Carriers?" And this article goes on to talk about essentially a $12.9 billion ship, the Gerald R. Ford, and how it just suffered its second failure. It suffered a new failure at sea, and it was forced to back into port and raised fresh questions about the new class of aircraft carriers and how they're being sought. Now, a great deal of attention has been paid to the growing pains of the Ford-class supercarrier, and the debacle can mostly be traced back to the ship implementing untested technologies as a part of its core design, such as new electromagnetic catapults, things we've also touched on a lot, and how we're, you know, and lasers and these different new advanced technologies we're trying to implement into the military. And essentially, the ship is shaping up to rival the F-35 on its long list of U.S. military acquisition failures that are not only behind schedule, but over budget, and but do not work as advertised at the end of the day. However, lost in the Ford's troubled acquisition is a far more simple question. Why is the U.S. military building yet another aircraft carrier? Right now, and well, this really gets back to the point of what was brought to my attention. Now, this article goes on to make the claim that essentially the money could be better spent in other endeavors, in regard to the military, maybe submarines, which are much more important, arguably, today in regard to combating other threats. However, the real point here, as I often say, that money should not even be going to the military, because it's really a ridiculous claim. And the point that was recently brought to my attention by a commenter, I wish I remembered their name, I would give them some credit for this, but the simple fact that most people are completely unaware that right now in the world, there are only 41 aircraft carriers in service, which I should say that we are aware of. Guess how many the United States has? 20 of those. So combined, almost kind of perfectly aligning with the statistics of military spending, the rest of the world combined has 21 aircraft carriers. The U.S. has 20, with currently 15 more in the works. Now, they're constantly claiming that they need to combat Russia's rising threat. Take a guess how many Russia has. One. The nearest amount is in Japan, which they have four. So how can we possibly, with a straight face, continue to claim that we need to rebuild our military while we have 20 of 41 aircraft carriers in the world, which is kind of a ridiculous concept in general, because there's no concept of when you'll possibly need 20 at any given time, and much as they'll try to claim that. But so we have to begin to stand back and recognize how these blatant, ridiculous claims are made, almost entirely to continue to fund this bloated military-industrial complex and these companies like Lockheed Martin that reap all the benefits from this kind of a thing. And it's really built around complete nonsensical lies and this, you know, stoking this ridiculous patriotic idea that we need to support the military. And I have no qualms about supporting the people in the military, but I do not agree with this nonsensical idea of rebuilding the military when we already have a vastly larger amount of every possible thing you could think of than everyone else in the world. And it's just frustrating to see this. And the most important point to me here is that this stuff is easily researchable. The fact that we have 20 to the 21 combined in the rest of the world, it's very easy to look up and find out. So it kind of goes back to a point from yesterday about saying why journalists in these press corps at the White House never ask the obvious questions, because this kind of thing would happen. How simple would it be for someone to simply say, when Donald Trump says we're rebuilding the military, say, well, Mr. Trump, how we have, you know, we account for more than half of the world's military spending, and we already have 20 aircraft carriers, and the rest of the world has 21 combined. How do you justify saying rebuilding the military? How would he possibly answer that question? He wouldn't, and that question will never get asked. And that is the point. So we need to begin to stand back and really acknowledge these kind of things and do our own research. As we always say, these kind of things are loftily thrown out by the government in hopes that people never take the time to research them for themselves. So it continues to frustrate me that we constantly focus on this military aspect, and we just need to begin to see how much of a glaring lie that is. Moving on to the next story, coming from RonPaulInstitute.org. Real assassin arrested in staged Kiev hit linked to Ukrainian intelligence as official story unravels. The Ukrainian government's staged assassination of anti-Putin journalist Arkady Babchenko has taken an even stranger turn, as evidence has emerged that his would-be Russia-ordered assassin and the man who supposedly hired him both say they work for Ukrainian counterintelligence, casting serious doubts on the official story. To review, Ukrainian authorities announced last Tuesday that Babchenko had been assassinated after returning home from the store. On Wednesday, Babchenko appeared at a press conference with Ukrainian authorities, who said he faked the assassination and it was an elaborate sting to bust an actual hit planned by Russia. Only now we find that the hitman is an outspoken critic of Russia who says he worked for Ukrainian counterintelligence, a claim Ukraine initially denied but then later admitted was true. Meanwhile, the guy who supposedly hired him also says he works for Ukrainian counterintelligence, a claim Ukraine denies as it immediately destroys the carefully scripted, if rapidly imploding, Ukrainian narrative meant to scapegoat Russia for what has been a fake news story of epic proportions emerging from the one nation that not only was the biggest foreign donor to the Clinton Foundation, but has made fake news propaganda into an art form. Maybe a finger painting art form, but an art form nonetheless. This story is just such another ridiculous example of how far they're willing to go to progress their agenda. And I think it has to be pretty clear, as I called it before, Skripal 2.0, this is just, and this one's even worse. This is clearly a botched attempt to stage Russia, or rather to frame Russia yet again as the bad guy, all leading back to this idea of creating an external threat to justify all of the foreign policy going on. Ukraine is simply another proxy of the United States today, as we've talked about in the past. Simply another coup-staged overthrown government where they installed their neo-Nazi government to control and use how they see fit. And this is exactly what we're talking about. And whether this was, you know, created by the United States or whether this was just Ukraine taking action on their own, it was clearly a very ridiculous attempt, and it blew up in their face. And now it's all tracing back to the Ukrainian counterintelligence. And it's just such a ridiculous concept that we, I mean, the fact that first they deny that he's part of Ukrainian counterintelligence, and then, oh, we'll say, oh yeah, that is true, but we still deny this one. It's like, why would we trust them at all on any of the things they say after they stage this ridiculous, like their officials lie, the police lie, the media lied. And it's also, as I pointed out before, it's humorous how all of them, Caitlin Johnstone did a great article about this, how all of the mainstream media just dove on this. No due diligence, no fact-checking. I mean, that's nothing new for mainstream media today, but just said, oh, Russia did it. Look at that. We knew it. We told you so. Even coming out and saying, you know, giving these kind of like pompous tweets about how, oh, look, you guys doubted Skripal, but look at this. You should have known better. And then go and delete their tweet after it turns out that it was all one big lie. It's just, it's very humorous to see. So just another example of why we should not trust anything coming from these mainstream outlets. Do your due diligence at every given turn. Moving on to the next story, coming from thefreethoughtproject.com. Parents jailed, 15-year-old kidnapped by government for using cannabis to stop his seizures. A teenager who suffers from seizures was forcibly separated from his parents and put into state custody while his parents were jailed and charged with reckless conduct after they provided their son with marijuana to control his seizure disorder, something that is verifiably shown to work numerous times, numerous studies, all across the country, with about half the country or more acknowledging that it not only works, but is like the best possible treatment for exactly that kind of disorder. So it's shocking to see that this is even still happening in this country. Matthew and Susanna Brill say they let their 15-year-old son David smoke cannabis in a desperate attempt to control his severe epileptic seizures. David was having numerous seizures a day, and the pharmaceutical drugs he was prescribed to control his epilepsy failed to work. Big surprise there. And of course, when all of the side effects kick off when trying to use these, they just prescribe more drugs that cause more side effects and on and on. Although Georgia recognizes cannabis as a treatment for epilepsy by allowing certified patients to possess up to 20 fluid ounces of CBD, the reality is there is no way to legally obtain or produce CBD oil without being in violation of Georgia law, which is something we've talked about in the past. Is this ongoing hypocrisy right now, this contradiction, where these states pretend to be going forward and allowing these kind of, you know, halfway measures that, oh, we acknowledge medical use of cannabis, but they make it impossible to ever get it or bring it across state lines. So it's a half-hearted measure meant to, it's a political move to make it look, you know, to appease the people on this side of the argument, when in reality, it's still completely illegal in the state, even though they pretend to acknowledge it. Despite having no legal access to cannabis, more than 3,500 people are registered with the state as medical marijuana patients, which is interesting. You can see that there's a lot of people that are interested in moving forward with this. I mean, that could all across the country, that's the case. Mr. Brill, David's stepfather, said, quote, "Even with the ramifications with the law, I don't care. For 71 days, he was able to ride a bike, go play, lift weights. We were able to achieve that with David medicated not from Big Pharma, but David medicated with marijuana. The parents say they informed their son's doctor about using cannabis to treat his seizures without objection, but his therapist reported the medical marijuana use to authorities. The call resulted in a visit by the Twiggs County Sheriff's Department and on April 19th, who demanded that David stop taking the medicine that had stopped his seizures. Susanna Brill said, quote, "We complied. And within 14 hours of complying, we were rushing our son to the hospital. It was one of the most horrific seizures I had ever seen." I mean, how frustrating is this to continue to see? The fact that this is even still happening in this country is astonishing to me. And how this therapist is forcing their beliefs on somebody else, that they find cannabis to be some kind of illegal act just because the government says so and refuses to acknowledge how it was actually helping. Their job is to help this child. And instead of doing what they're supposed to do, they call the police and report them, which is likely something that they're told they have to do, but it's still incredibly frustrating to see that this continues to happen this way. And the fact that he goes 71 days without seizures after suffering his whole life, and then because they deem it illegal by some arbitrary thing coming down from some overreaching government hand, they pull it from him and he immediately gets rushed to the hospital with the worst seizure of his life. I mean, you cannot deny that kind of a correlation. And we've covered stories like this more times than I can possibly stomach. And there is such an obvious corporate influence over what we're seeing here today. And as I always point out, if we need any better example of how far we are from any kind of an actual democratic society, when we can have the vast majority of the country who agrees not only that this should be legalized and decriminalized, but that there is absolutely a medical value, a medical use for whether you're talking about CBD or THC or all of it combined, and yet still we see the government pretend that it's not real. There's very clear corporate influence taking place here. But it's continually frustrating to see that we can watch how they can see how it's hurting this child, and still, because of whatever law they think is right, whatever nonsensical idea they put forward, that they're just doing their job, and yet they're willing to pump this kid full of drugs, watch him almost die, and think that that's the right thing to do. It's just disheartening to think that there are still people out there that blindly follow what they're told. And even when you can physically see the results of exactly that kind of policy, it's just disgusting. And I really think this is something that we need to continue to highlight and show. I mean, the fact that we can have more than half the country, states right across state lines, who allow this kind of thing, and yet this state is literally locking these parents up for giving their child something that actually cured his ailment. I can't even wrap my mind around the fact that there are people still willing to follow through with that. So get this story out there, talk about it all you can. It's something we really need. This story needs to be put behind us. We need to be done with the idea that you can still be arrested for using, especially a non-psychoactive CBD supplement, as that is about as ridiculous as continuing to think that hemp should be illegal. And this traces all the way back to the concept of muddling the idea of these things for corporate reasons. Hemp, CBD, these things are non-psychoactive, yet they're still Schedule I drugs today. Just think about how ridiculous that truly is. And then you'll begin to see the real corporate influence taking place over our own government, which is the way everything runs today. Moving on to the next story coming from theantimedia.com, state of emergency in Oregon as public discovers capital city has toxic water. And this is a story we just touched on in our last show, and it turns out that there is actually a problem with the water, but it doesn't explain the weirdly cryptic message that went out. But I guess toxins have been found in the tap water in Salem, Oregon, resulting in the declaration of a state of emergency by Oregon Governor Kate Brown. The National Guard is expected to deliver water to residents using 10 water stations supplied by 2,000-gallon tankers. It turns out officials in Salem, Oregon, misled the public about the presence of an algae bloom and the safety of their water as early as May 23rd. On that day, the city of Salem issued a press release assuring residents that their water was indeed safe. Less than a week later, the city's tone dramatically changed when officials began sending alerts informing residents that the city's water was indeed contaminated. Officials said the water is harmless to shower in or wash dishes and laundry with, but stressed that drinking the water could cause symptoms including vomiting, diarrhea, and even kidney and liver damage. Experts have warned that the water cannot be treated. Filters, boiling, and other methods will not eliminate the toxins. And then on May 29th was when the vague, ominous emergency alert went out. And weirdly enough, Salem's official website went down immediately after that emergency went out. Something doesn't add up here. Clearly, there is an issue going on with the water, but the way that this message went out, there's more to the story that I don't think we're seeing. Because immediately after this emergency text went out, essentially, they sent out tweets saying that there is no civil emergency. Please disregard. Don't call 911. That essentially that the message was an error. I mean, all these different weird back and forth of the story, but there is seemingly an issue. It's just there's something very fishy going on with this story. I still think that there was some measure of gauging the public's reaction with such a vague statement. But to me, the real point that's happening here that there people are seemingly ignoring in this whole thing, because we hear algae bloom, toxic algae bloom. And people tend to just go, oh, well, that's a natural occurrence. That's something that, you know, that's no one's fault. However, generally the idea of what causes these things are not really well understood. But as I understand it, harmful algae blooms are more than often due to what they call overfeeding. This occurs when nutrients, mainly phosphorus, nitrogen, and carbon, from sources such as lawns and farmlands flowing downriver to the sea and then overfeeds the algae that exist normally in the environment. And so runoffs and soil erosion from fertilized agricultural areas and lawns, erosion from riverbanks, riverbeds, land clearing, deforestation, and sewage effluent are major sources of phosphorus and nitrogen that enter the waterways. All of these are considered external sources, meaning caused by human action. So we have to understand what that means here, is that pollution from all the actions of humans in this area are directly feeding what's happening here. And yet we don't talk about that. We always have to understand that these things that we're seeing, these odd reactions in the world, are usually due to human interaction and our just disregard for how our actions are hurting the planet. And we have exactly this kind of thing happening. All of our sewage and runoff and deforestation, just chemicals flowing into the water that cause these algae blooms to happen in the first place. But you'll never hear that on the mainstream media because, of course, a natural algae bloom, that's just something we can't control. But yes, we can if we stop the corporations from basically just ruining the planet. But it also needs to be pointed out that there things like this the phenomenon can happen due to sluggish water circulation, unusually high temperatures, and extreme weather events such as hurricane floods and drought. But I would argue all of those are basically also due to human interaction. But that's debatable to some degree. But we have to begin to recognize how our actions on this planet, our failure to acknowledge the harm we're causing, is what's causing exactly this kind of thing to happen. And I think whether that's part of it, or, you know, whether there's more to this story and more sewage and pollution going on there than we're being led to believe that caused this to happen, which is why they're trying to cover it up in the first place. I mean, these are my assumptions here, but there's clearly something involving in this story that we're not getting. There's some weird back and forth with the cryptic message and denying that it went out, trying to hide the fact that there's a real problem, and now it's coming out that it's a pretty big problem. There's more to this story, so we'll definitely follow up and let you know what we find out, but keep an eye on this story, because if I had to guess, I think there's some corruption going on here, something more so than just average human pollution that caused this to happen, and I think someone's trying to cover it up. But at the end of the day, our own pollution, I think, is what exactly caused this to happen, and we have to reflect on that. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from antimedia.com, Russia reaches deal to remove Iranian forces from Syria-Israeli border. A Russian ambassador announced to journalists Friday that an agreement was reached that would involve removing all Iranian forces from the Syria-Israel border in the Golan Heights, which is a widely recognized illegal occupation from Israel. From the UN to the international community in general, has continued to openly state that that is an illegal occupation by Israel. Israel has been pushing Russia on this issue for a while, and in condition not interfering in Syria's offensive against rebels in southern Syria on getting Iran, along with Shiite militias, out of the border region. In return, Russia is expecting Israel to provide them with assistance in restoring diplomatic ties with the United States. It's not clear how Israel intends to do that, but Russian officials are said to be confident that Israel has the ability to help Russia in that direction. On top of the direct move to get Iran off the border, Russia is also promising to issue a statement criticizing Iran for fueling tensions with Israel and will push Syria not too closely back around in the ongoing rivalry. This is a very interesting development. I would argue that to some degree there's a lot of misinformation flying around, like we saw in the past with Israel talking with Russia before the decision to not give Syria the S-300s. And that story was largely misrepresented, but this is surprising to me. I would have not seen this coming, and I think you could make the argument either that Russia is choosing to side with Israel, which would align with what a lot of people tend to think, that a lot of this is just one big puppet show, and that all of these governments are working together, aiming towards some kind of a world government ultimately, which is not a conspiratorial aspect. It's been openly discussed by many prominent figures, especially in the US, over many, many years. But you could also argue possibly that Russia is simply seeking to create a peaceful resolution of the conflict that's going on, and that this is maybe one step to get Israel to back down. But I just don't think, as long as the Golan Heights are occupied by Israel, I don't think Syria is ever going to back down in that regard. And I think Syria has openly stated numerous times that having Iran leave Syria is not even on the table. That's not even up for discussion, they've claimed in the past. So I'd be interested to see where this goes, but I think this is a very interesting step for Russia. And I think seeing Russia back away and more aimed towards helping at least Israel in that specific regard may cause Syria to back down in what they're doing. But it's interesting to see where this goes, and it frustrates me a little bit, because I think out of everything we're seeing today, Israel has the most kind of sinister ambitions when it relates to Iran, when it relates to Syria, when it relates to any number of things. So seeing this happen, I would like to believe that it's Russia trying to play a peacemaker. We'll have to see how it plays out, but anything's possible in this regard. So to finish today, I'd like to touch on something that I found very interesting. I was recently contacted by a group from New York that is putting on a play in New York, New York at the Flea Theater from the 6th all the way to the 30th. And the play is called A Blanket of Dust. Now, it's a very interesting concept. It's a play based around 9/11, and it's based around 9/11 truth. So for the first 10 people to jump on the Last American Vagabonds Patreon page and sign up for $5 or more, I have 10 free passes for 2 tickets for this show coming up from June 6th to June 30th. And as well as anybody else that jumps on and gives me a $1 sign up for Patreon, I have a 20% off coupon I'll send you as well. And it's a very interesting concept here. They actually sent me the script to read, and it's very interesting concept and how it relates to 9/11. And I'll read you a little excerpt here. It says, on the morning of 9/11, Diane Crane, the daughter of a ranking U.S. senator, gets a farewell phone call from her husband trapped in Tower 1 just before it collapses. She rushes in a panic to New York City to witness the solitary collapse of Building 7, never hit by an airplane. She's tortured by the evidence that all three buildings seem to collapse identically, with their remains suggesting they were purposely demolished. Follow Diane as she pursues the most powerful people in Washington to seek justice for her husband's death, only to learn that the government for the people, by the people, may not actually be for the people. So this is a fantastic concept, and I really like the script that they sent me, and I like where this is going. And really, this just gives me hope that people are beginning to wake up here. And I think it'd be shocking for many to realize that the vast majority of people, at the very least, question the official story of 9/11. And that's a pretty hopeful concept, that people are beginning to wake up enough to realize that at the very least we've been lied to. So I recommend anyone in the area jump out there and check this play out. I think it's going to be a really interesting concept that really will help open people's minds to what's going on here. And like I said, the first 10 people to sign up for $5 or more on the Patreon page, I'll send you 2 free tickets to the play. And anyone else that signs up for $1 more before the play starts, I will make sure and give you a 20% off coupon. It's really nice to see that this kind of thing is happening and that it's getting a little bit more mainstream. So make sure you get out there and support this. And really, at the end of the day, we must never stop asking questions. We must never stop seeking answers to those questions. And by now, we must see that we can never blindly trust the answers of the government that has built an empire on the lies of the past. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.